Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. The first thing I'm going to bring you is the Great British Crack-Up. Britain's decision to leave the European Union has left the kingdom's four countries deeply divided. While England and Wales voted for Brexit last June, both Scotland and Northern Ireland voted to remain in the European Union by majorities of 62% and 56%. Now, faced with being dragged out of Europe, both are seriously reconsidering their historic position within the United Kingdom. In March, the Scottish Parliament voted for the right to hold a second independence referendum, which could lead to Scotland seceding from the UK and rejoining the EU. Irish nationalists are demanding their own border poll on unification with the Republic of Ireland. If the Scots and the Irish both choose independence, England and Wales will stand alone. Ironically, the vote for Brexit was supposedly a vote for a resurgent Britain, one that would wrest back power and national pride from Brussels. Instead, it may have triggered the beginning of the end of the United Kingdom. And now we're on to something else, and that is the clear alternative. To cope with a shortage of butchers in World War II, grocers created the self-service meat section with its rows of pre-cut chops and fillets. Yet there was another invisible force behind that change, and it was cellophane, which profoundly colors how we shop today in ways that most consumers aren't aware of. A Swiss textile manufacturer invented cellophane in 1908. The word is from cellulose and diaphane, meaning transparent. Chemists improved the product, which was eventually controlled by DuPont, making it both moisture-proof and permeable to air. That was a boon to the brightly lit modern supermarkets, because even chilled red meat kept in airtight packaging turns brown, an initially harmless biochemical reaction that shoppers mistake for spoilage. In contrast, cellophane permits oxygen to react with meat, maintaining its crimson hue for days. Cellophane changed our idea of what natural looks like. Al Hisano has written a book about this. It's entitled Visualizing Taste: How Business Created the Look of American Food. There's still some truth to the marketing zeitgeist summed up in the Progressive Grocer in 1937. She buys meat with her eyes, it said. But things are changing. Internet-based food shopping is projected to gobble 20% of the traditional food market by 2025. Online, visual packaging is reportedly less important than information. Eyesight is so last century. In the future, she'll buy meat with her mind. And now, the question of the day is truth losing face value? Technology is making it easier than ever to produce fake videos. How will democracy cope? From decisive instant replays to conclusive body cam footage, people tend to trust video evidence. But that faith could become quaint as machine learning is enabling ordinary users to create videos of just about anyone doing just about anything. Last month, Reddit shut down a discussion board devoted to using open source tools to insert famous faces into pornographic videos. Observers say this episode represents just one of the many ways that this technology could fuel social problems, particularly in an age of political polarization. Combating the negative effects of fabricated video will require a shift among news outlets and among news consumers. Fake news has always been a part of U.S. politics, but modern technology has given fabricators new tools to blur the line between fact and fiction. When you see something, or when you believe that you see something and hearing something, it has a much more visceral impact, by and large, than when it's something that you're just reading about. So I suspect that as we begin to see people really begin to use these techniques, we're going to see content being circulated which really punches us in the gut in a way that wasn't true of other forms of fake news. This has implications for democracy that are eye-opening. Democracy assumes that its citizens share the same reality. We're about to find out whether democracy can be preserved when this assumption no longer holds. The face-swapping technology uses freely distributed open-source machine learning tools. Using publicly available images of a person's face, it can train a neural network to swap out the face from an original with a new face that mimics the original expressions. Also, another technology called Voco, developed in 2016 by Adobe Systems, the maker of Photoshop, lets users take an audio recording and alter it to include novel words and phrases in the original speaker's voice. All it needs is 20 minutes of recorded speech. Countering fabricated videos will require news media to play a more active role in verification. That doesn't have to be a partisan stance, but it does have a stance in favor of truth, because otherwise, I think they're going to continue to do quite enormous damage to democracy. But in the era of fake news, verification often is not enough. Even an easily debunked fake video can cast an innocent victim in a false light just by having its existence discussed in the news. Journalists will have to do a better job of curation. The professionalization of journalism, which began at the turn of the century, it is the 20th century, established industry-wide norms and standards, and shifted the job's class composition to the white-collar worker. This is going to require another kind of wholesale readdressing of what newsrooms are actually doing. News consumers, too, will no doubt have to shift their expectations as well. Our next topic for today is natural disasters, but especially natural disasters last year in 2017. 2017 was the most expensive on record for U.S. natural disasters. According to a January report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, or NOAA, in total, they cost the United States an estimated $306 billion. What factors make 2017 so expensive? Americans saw a slew of unusually powerful weather events in 2017, with three major hurricanes, Harvey, Irma, and Maria, ranking in the top five costliest natural disasters since 1980. While damage to residences represented the biggest expense, industry sustained unusually significant blows. Tourism, an economic cornerstone in the Florida Keys and many Caribbean islands, was stalled by the violent weather, and pharmaceutical manufacturing capacity in Puerto Rico was decimated by Hurricane Maria. Energy production in Texas was also sharply cut in the days following Hurricane Harvey's record rainfalls. People were especially susceptible to last year's natural disasters. Hazards and Vulnerability Research at the University of South Carolina has said this, that several of the disasters, including hurricanes on the Gulf Coast and wildfires in California, have hit urban centers, and the impacts are based on the exposure of populations. Many of these events did not affect low-density areas. Well, how does the U.S. estimate the cost of a natural disaster? To form its estimate, NOAA draws data from public and private sources, such as the Insurance Services Office, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. But the calculations can be messy. For one thing, the effects of a disaster are wide-ranging. Everything from the destruction of houses to the lost revenue from business shutdowns. Also, many damaged assets from last year were uninsured. To correct for such gaps, NOAA scales up the data for insured losses, but it acknowledges that some costs, such as healthcare-related losses or values associated with loss of life, are not fully accounted for. Well, why is it that some places seemed ill-prepared? We have to make better decisions on where we allow development to occur. In the U.S., tough questions about disaster preparedness rarely arise when new construction begins. Flood experts argue that in Houston, for example, the increasingly paved urban landscape prevented the ground from absorbing floodwaters. The problem is also an economic disconnect. Development in vulnerable regions is typically driven by local communities that benefit from larger tax bases and more economic activity. But when disaster strikes, it's the federal government that often covers the damages. Local governments aren't always held responsible for paying for damages that risky development can cause. Are large-scale natural disasters becoming the new normal? Well, there are certain weather and climate hazards that we are seeing more often and more severely. According to NOAA, these are in heat and rain and flooding and drought. Those four have seen considerable increases. But the relationship between climate and weather is complicated. Harsher droughts and heavier floods can lead to more extreme weather, but they don't necessarily guarantee more disasters in the future. In other words, think of weather as a boxer and climate as a trainer. Weather still throws the punches, but climate trains the boxer. And as climate changes, as you change that trainer, the boxer will throw certain punches more often and more effectively. We're nearing the end of today's program. One of the themes, though, that I think I should bring up is the question, who should pay the infrastructure bill? Opening the second year of his presidency, President Trump launched a long-awaited initiative on infrastructure that is bipartisan in spirit, yet highly contentious. It's common ground as a priority because the need is as obvious and widespread as the nearest airport, bridge, or water main. It's contentious because of a disagreement over funding, partly over sheer dollar amounts, but also over the proper government role. While Mr. Trump pitches reliance on state and local governments, aided by private sector partnerships, Democrats are pushing a stronger role for federal funding. That state-federal disagreement between parties isn't limited to this issue, of course, but it's one that now threatens deal-making on a concern that in many ways should be ripe for congressional compromise. The Trump plan, still not released in full detail, tilts toward the states at a time when infrastructure planning and funding have already been moving in that direction. Experts say the dueling vision could be an ongoing source of tension, even as the realities of a deferred maintenance America push the parties toward action. A lot of this state-level emphasis is based on a phenomenon that's happening across the country, where states and cities and metro areas are raising their own taxes to pay for infrastructure projects. The idea of localities taking a lead role in their own infrastructure is already well established, but the challenge is that not all projects are right for private investment, and some communities that need investment don't have money to pay for it through their taxes or user fees. On top of that, some projects, such as the proposed new rail tunnel from New Jersey into New York City, span local, state, and federal purviews. The project matters to Manhattan-bound commuters, but also to flows of freight and people along the whole Northeast Corridor. All this leaves plenty of room for debate over the proper federal role and purpose in infrastructure. As we are finishing today, let me recommend a couple of books that perhaps you should be reading or getting from the library. One is called At Home, A Short History of Private Life. This is by Bill Bryson, and I'm sure you're all familiar with Bill Bryson, our master storyteller, entertaining as well as erudite. Another book is You Say to Brick by Wendy Lesser, a biography of the extraordinary modern architect Louis Kahn. And finally, Ken Jire, who wrote All the Gallant Men, and Donald Stratton, who lived it and co-wrote the book, must have been in perfect sync. I consider this book an American sailor's first-hand account of Pearl Harbor to be a classic, although it is graphic in places and not for everyone with a weak stomach. The final chapters reveal how it could happen again if we don't learn from past mistakes. And with that, we say goodbye today. Please come back enjoy having you, and I hope you enjoy the music between each segment.